B-Pod Studios.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning. Bob Cooney. Jamie Lynch. And Sam Wilson. Now, start your day with Farzetta and Trey on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Good morning, everybody, from our bunkers. I guess we're the bunker studios, day three of bunker broadcasting, ladies and gentlemen. Mark Farzetta with Trey Thomas, Bob Cooney, Jamie Lentz, Sam Wilson. Trey, I notice on your camera you're a little closer to your wall of balls today.
Yeah, I got a little closer to it. You just got to made my chair a little bit more comfortable for me, you know, made it a little bit more relaxing, you know, trying to have a nice little chill vibe.
You cozy on up to those balls, my friend. You relax a little bit, man. We're going to have some fun today. We're going to have some fun. I got a chance to watch Tiger King. Bob Cooney, did you get a chance to check it out? Did you do your homework assignment as I did?
Yeah. I did. I watched the first episode, and I started the second, and somebody took over the television. But I'm through episode one.
Oh, look, roommates, right, Bob? Roommates.
Freaky.
Oh, my God. Yeah, to say the least, and Jamie, I know you were certainly championing the cause to watch Tiger King. I'm a little weirded out. I don't know what I watched. I don't know what that was, but it was something. Joe Exotic. I still like Joe Exotica, but I see what all the hype is about.
Yeah,
Jamie, it's a weird one.
It's unique for sure. I guess that's the best way to put it.
It's unique.
I haven't gotten to the music video yet. I can't wait for that.
Oh, you haven't gotten to hear Kitty Kitty?
No, not yet.
Oh man, yeah, it's an amazing show.
When he was in the gift shop and he says, "Yeah, I have two albums," I was like, "What?"
Oh yeah.
Oh my God, it's nuts.
There's assorted shelves of fancy underwear.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm deep an episode and a half, about halfway through the last episode, the second episode. My wife was like, I think I'm done. I think I'm good for now. So we might return to it maybe even tonight, because what the hell else are we doing? But as of right now, I am a little weirded out, but it's interesting. Here's the thing. Philadelphia, I applaud the city of Philadelphia. I love the city of Philadelphia because the city of Philadelphia yesterday, I believe, saved a lot of jobs in the NBA, saved a lot of people money, at least, throughout the NBA. Because after listening to Adrian Wojnarowski talk about Josh Harris reversing his decision, as he put it in his statement, I realized that it was really Philadelphia that saved a lot of people's income here when they talked about possibly cutting 20% of employee salaries of the franchise. I could not have been more impressed with what Philadelphia did yesterday, because with their public backlash and as loud as they called BS on Josh Harris and the ownership group, that helped reverse the decision that was made. And also, huge shout out to Joel Embiid. I don't know if we could ever refer to him as immature ever again after what he was able to do yesterday by pledging $500,000 to help people that are dealing with coronavirus, help battle that, and also vowing to help the employees that were going to be affected by this. I think that ultimately was the nail in the coffin of the decision to say, you know what, we're going to cut 20% of any salary that's making over $50,000. It was a great thing, but it started with a lot of people on social media calling it out from the minute Mark Stein made it public. And credit to Mark Stein for making that story public. From the minute it went public, everybody jumping on the Sixers ownership group saying, what the hell are you doing? When just one of your owners is worth $3.8 billion, how do you justify cutting salary regardless of what the expenses are, whether or not the NBA is making money right now or not? How do you justify that when your ownership group of a privately owned business is saying, you know what, we're going to end up cutting salaries 20%. And I also credit, as we go through the phases here, to the coaches and the other employees that said, wait, hold on a second. Why would I trust you for me to give money back to you when I might not be here next year anyway? So credit to the people inside the organization that said no to this, to the people that actually stood up and said, this is BS, this is ridiculous, we're not going to accept this. So credit to them. And also, shame on an ownership group that did not exhaust every resource. And yesterday, I tried giving the benefit of the doubt as best I could. I tried being fair in all this. Bottom line is none of this was fair, because the benefit of the doubt I tried to give was I gave credit to ownership for at least maybe having a conversation with people in their higher ranking offices, which apparently they did, by them saying, you know what, we're going to take the 20% as well. By going around the ownership group and not going around the other employees to see whether or not, see how they would react to this, I said yesterday, I find it extremely odd that people that have been this successful, this brilliant in business to this point, couldn't come up with a better way to make sure that their employees were taken care of. And as it turns out, after BS was called, they magically found a way to deal with this better. So credit to the fan base of Philadelphia, the Sixers fan base, credit to Joel Embiid for calling them out on the BS. Now, Trey, you found the story yesterday that talked about, what, $3.5 million? Was it $3.5 million per game missed?
Well, that's not for the 76ers. That was for Golden State. That was just right. for if you're looking at what Golden State Warriors are doing this season, they're losing $3.5 million per game. That's, and then if you factor in the hockey, I believe the hockey team out there was losing, what, 1.6 per game? Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where what you were looking at just in these five games that have been missed in this season so far.
Right, and the great equalizer here, the reason that a lot of people's opinions are justified, the great equalizer here is the $3.8 billion. When you've acquired that kind of net worth, and that's just one individual owner of a big ownership group, when that's just one, you think, well, that kind of opens some doors for other opportunities and other possibilities to solve this problem in a different way. And I know Michael Rubin was public about shooting down the idea of actually cutting employees' salaries. I know that he was not happy about that. We'll hear from Sham in just a little bit, because, Bob, he put out the story yesterday saying that Michael Rubin was not happy about this, and a lot of people jumped on board. So did you even have a conversation within your own ownership group to the point of, oh, well, let's exhaust every other resource before we go public with anything that would cut an employee's salary?
No, they didn't. And that's what's unbelievable. Michael Rubin was caught by surprise, according to a story by Keith Pompey. Several of the minority owners were caught by surprise that this is what they were going to do. And here's the biggest thing, Mark. Here's where this could be irreparable. It looks as though Ben Simmons has taken all 76ers stuff off of his social media. Like, he's not connected with the team anymore.
Oh.
That, you know, when you do that, when the players are like, what the hell are you doing? And, you know, Joel Embiid puts out $500,000 and then they reverse action. You know, this is an ownership group that loves to put their arms around the players and tell them how much. And Michael Rubin hangs out with Joel Embiid and all that stuff. Okay, you might have done some damage where your players are looking at you with a side eye now. That might not relate much to the court, but it could relate, in some other ways that are negative to this ownership group.
Well, let's think about the timeline here. And I mentioned the phases a second ago. Phase one. Mark Stein puts out the report that the Sixers ownership plans to cut pay of anyone making over $500K by up to 20%. Phase two, public backlash for 17 hours. I went back and I looked at the time that Mark Stein tweeted and the time that Josh Harris and the Sixers released the statement saying, hey, my bad, 17 hours. Phase three came at 11:45 yesterday morning, just before afternoon. Ramona Shelbourne of ESPN reports that Joel Embiid says, I got you, basically, donating the $500,000 for corona relief, as well as taking care of employees of the 76ers that were going to be affected by the 20%, up to 20% pay cut. So then phase four was Woj puts out the tweet saying that there is dissension in the ranks. Members of the Sixers coaching staff, front office on contracts have until Thursday to actually agree to the 20% pay salary reduction. There was apprehension amongst the ranks on committing to giving back money to the ownership group, especially on the uncertainty surrounding the employment coaches and staff members going into next year. So, I mean, I know a lot of people jump right to Brett Brown there. If he doesn't know he's going to be back next year, why would he be giving money back? Just as an example. Then Sham comes out the report about Michael Rubin, and then Josh Harris says, you know what? My bad. I'm reversing the decision. I'm sorry. I apologize to everybody for the decision that we came to. There was a better way to handle this. Through all of it, again, The Sixers fan base stepped up big by letting their outcry heard. Then you also have Michael Rubin stepping up and saying, wait a minute, hold on a second. As you said, Bob, I'm taken off guard by this. And Joel Embiid pledging the $500,000, I think, was the nail in the coffin, so to speak, to the decision that the ownership group had come to just a day earlier. This is my biggest fear. Go ahead.
Mark, I was talking to my cousin who works up basically in asset management in Wall Street, and he was like, you know, he's a diehard Sixers fan as well, and he said, you know, the thing that really just kind of makes me feel uneasy about this is Apollo Asset Management is one of the more successful groups on Wall Street. And he's like, you know, any good group right now is actually going to profit off of this stock market downturn. And he's like, you know, he sent me a screenshot from Bloomberg basically saying, like, Apollo Asset Management, you know, capitalizing on gains right now or whatever that said. So, like, you know, you could have used your secondary income, which is more than enough to supplement your passion project that you have in the Sixers here. So, you know, there's that on top of it. There's not only net worth, there's not only the money they make from the Sixers, but there's also his asset management group, which is, you know, one of the most successful in the country. So it's just overall rotten.
Yeah, and I brought up the players maybe looking at the owners with a side eye. Imagine those other people. Imagine those other people that were told, you know, earlier this week via a conference call or however they did it, oh, sorry, you know, we're going to cut your pay. 1 week into this, or almost 2 weeks into it, we're going to cut your pay by 20%. You tell me those behind-the-scenes people aren't, you know, clenching their fists and you know, grinding their teeth at all of this. And how do they go, you know, forward with all this? It's horrible.
No, it absolutely is. Yeah, go ahead, Trey.
You know, I see this totally different a little bit because, one, the Apollo, his management company, has nothing to do with the 76ers. That's his own entity. So, you know, you can't mix the two and try to say, okay, well, that because that's doing well, then he should be able to take care of the other. That has nothing to do with it. If the 76ers has his own little thing. Now, they have 164 employees. Now, you have people that are outside of the Sixers that have lost their jobs. Where's the outrage for those same people that, you know, at least now with this situation, I know this wasn't a giving back. This was, you know, and I feel for the people that was going through this as well. But I look at it from the other side of it as well with ownership that, okay, you were still getting a portion of your check. You have some people out here that don't have jobs. They have lost their jobs due to this coronavirus. So, you know, some is more than nothing. And to me, you know, I know that this wasn't a giving back. This was saying, okay, we're trying to extend what we've made to try to get us through this virus thing. Because right now, the company right now is losing 3.5. And I'm just saying at average, maybe 3.5, maybe even more per game. And then, so you have 164 employees. What about the insurance that has to be paid on them? 401ks that's going to have to be paid. It's more than just their salaries that's going out.
Sure, and to their credit, the Sixers, I will say this, the Sixers never were going to tamper with the 401k, they weren't going to tamper with the benefits, so that's fine. But with all you just said, Trey, why should that mean more have to lose money? Why should that mean more have to lose their job? If you could take care of people the way the Sixers could, and I disagree with the idea that it's a separate thing, it's still owned by the same people. That's why I said yesterday, the Sixers are just one of their revenue streams. So if you have the means of your principal owner, your managing partner, your key owner here, Josh Harris, being worth $3.8 billion, if you have the assets to take care of the people that are trying to make your business a success and have been loyal to the cause, then reward their loyalty at this point when they need you most. If it means a couple of months of taking a loss, you do it. That's the difference between buying a regular business and buying something that people see as a part of their community. And when Josh Harris and his ownership group took over, what, 7-8 years ago now, my number one concern was when I was listening to that press conference from Adam Aaron, who at the time talked about this team, how he went to Penn, he grew up in the area and all that. I was looking at everybody else thinking, well, wait a minute. Are they just looking at this team like it's another investment, like it's another business opportunity? Or are they actually realizing they're buying a huge piece of our community in Philadelphia? Because I think a lot of people in this city, for all the things they might say about Ed Snyder back in the day when he bought the Sixers as well and Comcast took that over, a lot of people say, oh, you know, the Sixers, they're just the redheaded stepchild, to use an outdated phrase by now. But at least it was a group that really understood this area. And this decision yesterday by the Sixers, or excuse me, now 2 days ago by the Sixers, made those fears come back, where it was an outside entity buying a local product here that they weren't going to show enough loyalty to. This action yesterday reminded me of that. I'm happy as anybody else that they did reverse it. However, the fact that that's the conclusion they came to when they did not exhaust every single resource, that's something that will still leave me scratching my head. Again, I get so much credit to the fan base, and I give so much credit to Joel Embiid for stepping up yesterday.
And Trey, I'll side with you a little bit here. I agree that the business move of it probably is a good business plan, probably a good business model, but not now, not less than 2 weeks after. You know what I mean? I understand what you're saying, but I just think the timing was bad, and ultimately I guess they did also. But the plan that they put in place to save jobs, to keep people on payroll and not have people lose jobs, you can't argue with that. That's a good business plan. I just think it was too early.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe they did jump on it, but the fact that they reversed course, they reversed the decision as fast as they did, let you know they didn't exhaust every resource. To me, that's what's the most disappointing to me, is that, wow, they didn't have to come up with another plan. They didn't need a week to think of another plan. This quickly, they could go, oh, wait, no, hold on, my bad, that was the wrong decision.
Okay.
I
see it the way I see it. You guys see it the way you see it.
I understand the way you see it. And you opened my eyes yesterday where I changed course. You know, you made me see it in a different light. I hear you. I understand the business aspect totally. But they must have done something wrong for them to reverse it. And I believe it was just the wrongness was that it was just too early.
I don't disagree, Trey. Now give me money, damn it. No, it's funny. We do. We call on a lot of people on our own private circles. For instance, Bob, yesterday you referenced a buddy of yours that is big into the business world, and he just said, "Are you guys serious? There's no money coming in." Jamie just referenced a friend of his that works on Wall Street. I have a buddy of mine who I will say this is a great businessman. And when he's also a big sports fan, and oftentimes we'll go back and forth about arguing the ethics of sports and the ethics of business and all that. When I got a text from him yesterday saying what the Sixers were doing was complete BS, I went, damn. If he knows there's a way to manage this better, there's going to be a way that they manage it better. And the Sixers certainly acknowledged that yesterday. But from this point on, will you look at Joel Embiid differently? Because, look, this guy a couple of days ago was putting out pictures of himself with, like, goofy haircuts and challenging people to play FIFA and all that other stuff. Then you blink and all of a sudden he's talking about $500,000 to a great cause. Obviously, right now, the biggest cause that we could all tackle right now, which is coronavirus, COVID-19. And he says, you know what, $500,000 to that, and I'm going to figure out a way to help the employees as well. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, My opinion of Joel Embiid has changed dramatically. And then I also learned what he's been doing throughout this entire quarantining stage, isolation stage. But, Trey, I know we have been big critics of Joel Embiid, the maturity level of him over the years. When you look at him now, do you look at him a little bit differently?
No. I'm glad that he stepped up and he did what he was supposed to do. You know, he's donated to help out with the cause. But that has nothing to do with on court.
Okay, so you still want to see it on court. You still need to see him in the game.
Yes,
Trey,
I still need to see
him. Couldn't agree with you more. I saw people saying that yesterday. Oh, you can never call him immature again and all that. Look, I'm sorry. It's easy to write a $500,000 check when you're making.
No, it ain't that easy, man.
Well, not that easy. Yeah, that's true. But the level of maturity, I don't know if that goes hand in hand with writing a check. Niceness, all that, compassionate, that's great. But I don't think it takes away his immaturity. I agree with Trey.
Oh, all right. Jamie, where do you go here?
I maturity? Don't necessarily. I mean, it's certainly a sign of maturity, but I think him on the court and maturity and this type of maturity are two different things.
He gave $500,000. The only person to go close to that or really even go at that same number is Rudy Gobert, the guy that, you know, caused the hysteria, really, of the coronavirus in the NBA. Joel Embiid didn't have anything to do with it. And he still went, you know what, 500 grand.
Yeah, no, I think it's an incredible move. And, you know, I think a lot of people will always love him for it. But I just differentiate him on the court and him with this move.
Did you see what he's been doing in self-isolation? Did anyone see this?
Researching COVID.
This sounds pretty mature.
Oh, yeah, I did see that, yeah.
Helping building up his white blood cells, watching the hub. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know if there's been any business that's been busier than the hub in recent days. they've got a lot done, Trey. And you found out that they're even helping the kids out, and we'll get to that in a second. But we got so much to get into today. First and foremost, obviously, with the Sixers and reaction to that. We also have, like, what's the next move now for the Eagles? After all these different things that have taken place, what's the next move? One of the newcomers is a big fan of their head coach. And of all the adjectives that have been used to describe Doug Peterson, I never thought this particular adjective would be used. Now, as a business part of this, a lot of the big names as far as free agent wide receivers have gone, they're off the books now. They're off. They're out. Robbie Anderson goes to the Panthers. Breshad Perriman, he goes elsewhere as well. You have all these different players that you thought that the Eagles might be after. Perriman got an 8-year deal to go to the Jets. An $8 million deal on 1 year to go to the Jets. So you had free agent wide receivers you could have brought in if you're Howie Roseman. You opted not to. This just makes me believe that the next big thing that the Eagles are going to do is the draft. That's like, I think as far as free agency goes with any big impact, I think they're done. A lot of names.
Yesterday, Mark, I was like, "Wow, he's actually going to take like two guys in the first three rounds." Like, I think that's his plan. I think he looked at this free agent class and went, "Nah," because it's a pretty terrible free agent class for wide receivers. So the only thing that tells me is he's got real, real plans of securing one of those top three guys in the draft, and then probably taking somebody else as well.
CeeDee Lamb, Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs III. I still don't get how T. Higgins is ranked as high as he is after not running in the combine. Justin Jefferson is another name out there as well. Jalen Reagor, another
Jalen
one.
Jalen Reagor, yeah.
Yeah, you're out of TCU. There's a lot of names that I know people are going to be throwing around over the next month or so. But I don't see another Howie wow me type of move coming before the draft. And that's unfortunate because I know there's no great guy that you could talk about in free agency now, but Robbie Anderson I thought would have been at least serviceable. I'm not a Breshad Perriman guy, but I wouldn't have been surprised if the Eagles would have reached out to him. $8 million for the one-year deal, it looks like. I don't think that the Eagles are going to be making any big moves, significant moves between now and the draft. I think it all comes down to using the remaining 8 draft picks that they have. To help us dissect this further is our guy Adam Schefter at 7:30 today. At 9 o'clock, we'll be joined by the aforementioned Keith Pompey to swing it back to the Sixers and get people's reaction to how they reversed course just yesterday. And Trey, you have a couple of interesting stories out here. One has to do with a footballer over in Spain breaking quarantine to go see his girlfriend.
Yeah, white blood cells was high.
Have we proven this yet? Is this proven?
I don't know. It was a story. You already put
I'm
it
still
out
doing
there.
A lot of studying on it, Mark.
No, I'm talking about the white blood cells.
It's on the internet. Yeah. It's on the internet.
It's on the internet. It's definitely true. I mean, it's on the internet.
Okay, good enough. And then the competitive edge never leaving an athlete. Because I got a chance to interview Connor Barwin the other day. He also donated $25,000 to the Ertz Family Foundation that's helping out Phil Abundance. Connor Barwin, now a member of the front office for the Eagles. He said that he didn't get a chance to win as a player. He missed out on a Super Bowl here in Philadelphia. But he wants to bring Philadelphia the second Super Bowl as a front office. Can you call him an executive when he's an assistant to the general? That's an exec, right, still? That's
sure.
Right.
Yeah, he's the assistant regional manager.
Not the assistant two, but the assistant regional manager. But he wants to bring a second Super Bowl to Philadelphia. So, Trey, you transitioned from a player to a coach, obviously. How does that competitive edge kind of change when you go from the guy on the field making things happen to the guy hoping the guy on the field makes the play that you told him to make. So I want to get into that a little bit later today. And then also we have some more funsies of we talk about people taking a hit financially now. Apparently there's one job that this the coronavirus has affected greatly in the world. Well, and I don't think anyone's really thought of it, so we'll get to that as well. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. When we come back, we'll hear Sham himself discuss Sixers ownership and the man that actually stepped up in that ownership group and said, wait a minute, what the hell are we doing here? We'll get to that in a second here on 97.5, The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic.
6 o'clock hour brought to you by United United Rentals Power and HVAC for all your power generation and HVAC rentals in the tri-state area. Visit unitedrentals.com. Trey, I forgot to mention in our open there, we're going to have a fun little side topic for people today, and that is awkward conversations you've overheard.
Yes.
And I know you have one. I certainly have one. You got me thinking about it, and I have certainly been put in situations, or been in situations, I should say, where I'm just thinking to myself, that's an interesting case there, but you have an awkward situation or two that you've been in.
Yeah, it was just an awkward conversation that I just overheard, and it was quite funny. I found myself just falling at.
How long ago was it?
This was just the other day. What day was that? I think I was at my studio painting, hanging out, and then I went to order some food at Cheesecake Factory the other day, and went to go pick up my food. Are we getting into it now, or do you want to wait for later?
Let's wait a little bit. I want to make sure you have full time for it. Because the other thing is, like, what day is it? Every day is Monday now. I think every day is Monday is kind of how every day kind of feels, unfortunately. But yeah, we'll get into that. But here is Sham yesterday talking about the ownership group not being on the same page when it came to this decision to move ahead with. This is before they reversed it. To move ahead of with the 20% pay cut, up to 20% pay cut for employees making over 50 grand. Here's Sham yesterday.
Sources tell me 76ers part owner Michael Rubin is upset and outrage over the team deciding to reduce certain employees' payment by up to 20% temporarily. Rubin was not believed to be part of the decision-making process this week among the ownership level, and you're already starting to see the financial ramifications of the coronavirus outbreak start to seep into the NBA level. The 76ers All-Star Center, Joel Embiid, pledged to donate $500,000 toward coronavirus relief funds, and also is making a separate commitment to take care of employees that are being impacted by the reduction in payment this week.
So that's where you kind of, your eyebrows were raised, and you said, wait a minute, hold on a second. One of the owners, now granted he's not the managing partner by any means, but Michael Rubin.
I was
Rubin,
just going to say, bold move by him to start going to the media saying that he's upset as a minority owner. I would imagine that Harrison Blitzer don't take that too kindly.
Well, I mean, in all honesty, who do you think understands Philadelphia a little bit better? Like, in all honesty, do you think it's Michael Rubin?
Yeah,
do you think it's Harrison Blitzer?
I'm not denying that. And Michael Rubin's in the right because he felt like he wasn't consulted. I'm just saying, you know, he's how long until Wolf or Blitzer and Harris go, yeah, all right, buddy, your minority share, yeah, we can buy that up in two breaths of a second here.
Well, but here's what I wouldn't mind about that. Yeah, go ahead, because you think Michael Rubin's going to keep quiet after something like that? go ahead. Spill
just,
the
it
beans.
Was a bold move by him.
Yeah,
put him on the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Trey, we don't have our console in front of us. We can't put them on the table, unfortunately. But Bob, I mean, that shows a disconnect in the ownership group as well, that they just said, no, this is what we're going to do. And they went ahead and they asked employees to do it by Thursday. Like, it wasn't like they took a temperature. It wasn't like they went around the horn and said, hey, what's everybody think about this before we proceed? They took the next step. They even had a statement from Scott O'Neill out there talking about doing it. Like, what kind of I mean, we talk about dysfunction on the court often when we talk about, you know, are Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid getting along, whatever. What about dysfunction within the own ownership group, Bob?
Yeah, you know, through the years, the 7 or 8 years that this group has owned the team, you really haven't heard much about it. Like, you know, Josh Harris was just the guy that you saw every once in a while and awkwardly would try to conduct an interview and, you know, wasn't that good at it. And, you know, you kind of just look down like, okay, just keep paying the bills and we'll be happy. And for the most part, that's what they've been doing. You know, they've gone out and they've spent a lot of money and they've done things that fans wanted them to do in that aspect. But when it comes to, you know, the personal side of it and does he get it, or are these just like fantasy group owners where they're just having fun with this little side thing? Well, real questions are starting to pop up. And when it starts from within, from, you know, the people, the behind the scenes people whose money he was trying to take to the players, it's going to grow from within and come out. And, you know, this might be the start of real questionable time for this ownership group.
And the other thing is, when you listen to Woj talk about other owners and other teams watching the Sixers every step here, I think their initial reaction was, okay, all right, they're going to do 20%. All right, let's see how this goes. Oh, it failed miserably. Okay, we're not going to do this anymore. So that's what when I say that Philadelphia helps save a lot of other people's income around the NBA, that's what I'm talking about. The fact that every owner around the league was watching what the maybe exception of Mark Cuban, for instance, was watching what the Sixers would do, and they were going to react accordingly. Well, the Sixers might have bought themselves some time here, and they might have bought themselves some time for other people around the league, thanks to Philadelphia calling BS on the decision that they made yesterday, and then obviously reversing that decision. So I think a lot of people in Philadelphia should be proud of themselves, and I also give a lot of credit to Joel Embiid for saying, you know what, guys, this isn't the way to go about this. I'm going to correct your mistake. Imagine that, a player, an employee going, hey, what my bosses are doing is crazy. The guys that signed my paycheck, that's crazy. I got you.
Well, now they've really backed themselves into a corner, too, because let's take from what Trey was saying and agreeing with the business move. And I said, like, it's a good plan for a business move. It just might have been too early. But eventually they're going to have to do something probably along these lines. Well, now how are they going to do that moving forward? They're going to make themselves look like more like bigger asses if they try to do this again. Mm-hmm. It's almost like, not that I would have rather they stuck with it because I don't want anybody to lose money, but had they and then come out maybe today and say, look, this is why we're doing it. We're saving jobs. We're doing this and explain themselves. It might have smoothed over easier than when they're going to have to backtrack and do this again.
Well, what do you call it? What's the financial term? Dead money? When you're putting out money, you're getting nothing in return?
Right, yeah.
All right. So Joel Embiid, what is he getting in return from anybody when he's literally just writing a check for $500,000 for Corona research? And then what is he getting in return by saying he's going to help take care of employees?
Tax break.
Okay, so would the Sixers not be able to get anything when they don't have money coming in?
No, but what I'm saying, what he's doing right now, when he's putting out $500,000, that's a tax break. That's a nice little tax write-off that he just put out.
Okay.
Yeah, so that just helped them with his taxes. Now, when you with what the team was doing, I do not know what it goes to them. But I know for Joel, when you're saying, all right, you're going to donate X amount of dollars like that, that's going to help you with your taxes.
Okay, so the owners wouldn't get anything for paying the salaries that they had?
No.
They wouldn't get anything for that? Even though they're not making money?
No, they're just that's just money going out. There are no tax break. This isn't a donation. You're finishing up salaries.
Okay.
So there is no tax breaks or anything that's coming off of that.
So he's getting a tax break for $500,000 for Corona. Then in addition to, because the $500,000, I don't think people realize that's for Corona. That's for coronavirus and research and combating that. Then he said he was going to do something separate to take care of the people that are in the ownership group, or excuse me, people that are members of the Sixers staff.
Mm-hmm.
So would that also be a tax write-off if he's just going to help out people that he essentially works with?
Any type of donations that he's going to be writing a check for, those, that's all towards taxes.
All right, so there was a story that came out years ago about Brandon Graham, 10 years ago with the NFL lockout. Brandon Graham supposedly wrote checks to people around the locker room. Did he get a tax break for that?
No, those were loans. When he's writing loans, that's something totally different. But when you're doing donations, like if you're doing donations, if you're writing tithes, if you're donating to churches, if you're doing like stuff like that's going to like Hertz family, doing something for Phil Abundance, that's all helping out with your taxes.
I don't think Joel Embiid's loaning these people the money.
No. That's not a loan. No. Yeah. When you said something about BG, when Brandon Graham stuff was a loan. But okay. When you're talking about Joel is saying, all right, I'm going to donate $500,000. That's right there is helping him when he has
certainly.
Filed for taxes.
Certainly, but that's in one department. The other department is him saying he's going to help out the people that work for the Sixers.
Mm-hmm. So if it's a donation type situation, it's going to go towards taxes.
Okay. All right. Well, that would, I think, file under the coronavirus research he wants to donate to. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it would if you would file it at all if you're just giving a friend money.
No, yeah. that's a loan, right?
Yeah, that's a loan. That's something totally different.
Okay, so you don't think you get a tax write off for that?
No, nah, for just giving money. No.
So bottom line, he's lighting money on fire for the advancement of his fellow man.
Who? Which one now?
Embiid, the one that he's donating to, or donating. There's a word. The one that he's giving money to the employees of the 76ers, saying, "I'll take care of you."
Now it depends on how he's putting this together. You know, I don't know the details of how he's doing this, but it all depends on how he's giving this money to them.
Mm-hmm. I would highly doubt in like 5 years Joel Embiid's going to go up to a Sixers ticket office salesman and say, "Hey, where's my $50,000 or whatever?"
I don't see him doing something like that.
All right, coming up, Trey, I want you to get into your awkward experience, because I think we've all in this world, especially now where everyone's walking around on cell phones, for instance, or back in the day, I remember when Bluetooth first came out, it was like, who's that person talking to? And it's like they had the Bluetooth in the ear. I think we have all heard the awkward conversations, and we will get into that just a little bit here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
Farzetta and Trey in the morning.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
97.5 The Fanatic.
And more on that note, as you just heard in that promo, Operation Shop Local. Small businesses are the backbone of our local communities, and right now they need some help. Introducing 97.5 The Fanatic's Operation Shop Local. Our initiative is to set up, encourage gift card purchasing for your local businesses and to highlight those offering home delivery or curbside pickup. Business owners, you can go to 975thefanatic.com right now and list your business for free in our free directory. The Fanatic is promoting to our listeners to review and also patronize whenever possible. Operation Shop Local, because we're all in this together from the Beasley Media Group and 97.5 The Fanatic. So Trey, you're a man about town, and recently you overheard a bit of an awkward conversation.
Yeah. So it was that day. It was funny because I started the tweet on my I started texting the tweet like, hey, I was just at Cheesecake Factory, and then I messed around and pushed sent a tweet
Cheesecake Factory.
Yeah, before I could finish it. So I ordered my food, and you know, with social distancing and everything, you could just only come if it's takeout only. So I went in, picked up my food, and I was sitting there waiting for them to finish bagging my food up, and there was another couple there, a couple with their child, and then another guy came in, and these dudes were like, you know, just two cats that, you know, just you know, you could tell like they really didn't know each other, and that this was their first time having an interaction with each other, and they walked in, and the dude was like, hey, yo, what's up, man? And you know, and the guy replied, and you know, he was sitting there with his child, he was there with his child, and his wife was there, or whoever was there, and she ended up leaving with the little girl. And so the two guys started talking like, yeah, man, you know, I have a young daughter too, you know, and she's around that same age. And he was like, you know, do y'all breastfeed? And I'm sitting there like, what? Did he just ask this man if his wife breastfeeds the baby?
What the hell?
Like, wait, how does that come out? Like, what is he? Why are you asking him if he breastfeeds, if his wife breastfeeds the child?
Usually,
it's
that's
an
a
awkward
woman
situation.
Yeah, that's like usually that's woman to woman conversation.
Yeah,
rarely is it like dad to dad. Like Jamie, you and I are new fathers. I've never asked you about what your wife is doing. I know what she's doing because our wives talk. But like I've never been like, hey, what do you think about like that's usually woman to woman conversation.
Yeah, so Mark, how are Celeste's breasts doing? Are they, that doesn't happen.
That is
so awkward.
Did you give a look?
That's really awkward.
Did you turn around and like, what the hell?
I just looked up like, wait, and the guy was like, yeah, no, she's not breastfeeding. You know, we just go ahead and, you know, that's
Sam,
awesome, man.
Sam, our female representation, it's usually woman to woman talk.
Yeah, I think that's really weird for a guy to have it. And Trey, you said that they didn't really know each other?
No, they didn't know each other. You could just tell, like, you know, they were like, hey, man, what's up, man? You know, it was just a casual, you know, why are we waiting on our food to be bagged
up?
Yeah,
it's very weird.
Yeah, and the dude was like, wow. Yeah, man, you know, so your wife, she breastfeed? And it's, no, she ain't breastfeeding, no breastfeeding, B, you know, and I mean, because it wasn't... They were just like two.
No, cats. she's not breastfeeding. Flat nipples. She got flat nipples, so she can't breastfeed. It's a very difficult thing right now.
This is why the cancellation of sports is so messed up. Because normally you would have said, "Man, did you see what Embiid did last night?" And I would have said, "Yeah, he played great." Instead, it goes to, "Hey, man, you breastfeeding?"
Yeah. So Mrs. Breastfeeding. I'm just wondering. You know, she looks mighty voluptuous. I didn't know.
I've been in a situation where I've just been kind of out in public and people have walked by on their phone and I have caught one sentence of the conversation and then I try to find the context for where that line actually fits in what conversation. Mm-hmm. An example would be I walked by a girl, she was probably in her mid-20s. She was on the phone, this is a couple weeks ago as a matter of fact, before we were all on lockdown, and she was on her phone and the only thing I heard her say was, "We had a great time, but the next morning I woke up and he wet the bed."
Mm.
That was the sentence I heard from their conversation. And I'm like,
nice.
Interesting. I don't know.
I had a kid on our college lacrosse team that was every time he hooked up with a girl, he would wet the bed. It was phenomenal.
Had that pee dream.
Yeah, there were people in college that you knew they always did it. It was so gross. It was like their MO.
As far as like the actually being in person, Trey, like you were, I think I told you before, when I was moving out of my old apartment, there was two people on the stoop breaking up that lived in my building.
Oh.
And they were on the step, excuse me, and they were in the middle of a breakup as I was moving stuff out of my apartment. So I kept walking through their conversation while I was carrying boxes. My personal favorite is when I carried my kayak between the two of them. So that was interesting. Jamie,
wait.
Yeah.
You have a kayak?
Yeah, man, I got a kayak, bro.
I mean, what?
Yeah, Mark's got a kayak.
Yeah, where do you use it in Philly?
The Schuylkill.
The Schuylkill.
Really? You get out there and kayak in the Schuylkill?
Yeah.
I'll admit, Trey, it's been years. It's been a while. Okay. But I still have the kayak. Yeah.
I've been tossing around getting a kayak.
Oh, kayaks are great, man. I love my kayak.
They are fun.
Huh.
And you certainly have enough riverways and all that, water areas in Medford you could get out there.
Absolutely,
and
have yourself
a time. A big kayaking area.
They have like a little boat race every year that I want to go
races,
to one year.
Kayak canoe races, race.
There it is. Yeah.
All right. So anybody that might have an awkward conversation. Now, this is great because we get to go down memory lane of when we were able to go outside into humanity and overhear these conversations and these awkward moments. So if anyone has one, like Bob, do you have one that jumps to mind by chance?
I just had one last. When did I go to South Carolina? Like 2 weeks ago when I was getting on the plane there. A girl sat down in front of me. She was still on her phone and she's like, "Well, yeah. My sister went into your phone and she saw all your interactions. So if I were you, I'd get ready to start packing my bags." And the girl, I'm not kidding you, was talking calmer than I was. Like just, yeah, well, you shouldn't have left it there. Okay, well, you take care. And like she was not a tinge of mad or anything like that. Just matter of factly, yeah, you're screwed.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Let's get to Jason in Allentown. Jason, what's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you? First time caller.
Oh, welcome in, buddy. How you doing in all this?
Good. You know, just staying away, as they say. So
Okay.
It's all
now, are you you sound like you're in the car. Are you still working?
Yeah, yeah. I'm actually in agriculture, so, you know, essential, as they say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, man. Well, thanks for keep on keeping on, my friend. What's on your mind today?
So I saw this video. I believe it was ESPN, and it was right after they signed Parks. And they were talking about him replacing, you know, Jenkins in that role.
Yeah.
And they were talking about, well, you might be like a dime package kind of guy and, you know, a backup. And he made the comment, you know, Parks doesn't back up anybody. So I didn't know if you heard anything on that or that you think that's going to cause some turmoil. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I heard that same comment, and my first thought was with the and thanks for the call, man. I appreciate it, and thanks again for working. The first thing that came to mind was when he talked about Malcolm Jenkins, he talked about it as if he was here to replace Malcolm Jenkins, both with productivity on the field and both as a leader off the field. We've talked about at length how hard that is for a player to just come into a locker room and kind of take over that role. Will Parks might feel a little bit more at home than most people, considering now he is at home. He's from our area. He's from Philadelphia. So I guess he has that extra comfortability. But as far as I'm concerned, I don't think that's going to be the case here. I think he is going to be in a backup role. I think he is going to be a guy that comes in more dime coverage than anything else. I think they are looking at Jalen Mills right now on a one-year prove-it deal for $5 million, saying he is going to be our starting free safety, and we're going to have him revert back to what he was while he was at LSU. So I think that's the direction. I think a couple of things that we've learned in the last couple of days about the Eagles secondary is that Jalen Mills is going to be your starting free safety. Rodney McLeod's also obviously back. Darius Slay is going to be one of your lockdown corner. And how about this? As we talked about the other day, if we had to pick one guy that's most deserving of the role of the other cornerback position after Darius Slay, it's Avonte Maddox. We thought, though, the politics behind it, the draft pick that went into it, that it would be Sidney Jones. Well, I saw Derek Gunn just the other day of NBC Sports Philly say that he feels it's going to be Avonte Maddox. He's heard from a source with the team that it's going to be Avonte Maddox taking over as your starting corner. So Will Parks taking over for Jenkins, I don't think it's going to happen. I think he does go into the backup role, Trey. I think that's what they're going to do right now, considering they already invested $5 million in Jalen Mills making that transition.
I just like that he spoke in third person. That was awesome.
Go ahead.
It makes me wonder if, you know, the Eagles held on to these picks, like you said, Mark, and it looks like this is what they're going to do and this is how they're going to shore up the offense. Maybe there is a team that would take a chance on a Sidney Jones, being as he was so highly regarded coming out, even with the injury, you know, and all that, and saying, well, the talent might still be there. We can get it. Do you use him, if they're set on Avonte Maddox, use him to move up in that first round? You know, maybe get into the low teens so that you can assure yourself that you're going to get one of those game-breaking receivers.
I think they're they seem to be confident with Craven LeBlanc. They seem to be obviously confident in Avonte Maddox if he is in fact going to be the other starting corner next to Darius Slay. And when they use nickels so many times, a lot of times they're not even using that other linebacker, and you have a guy coming in to cover the slot anyway. So you're going to have a very diverse group of corners. I mean, you would think going into this season.
Absolutely. I mean, because most of the time they're playing nickel anyway, they're not going to go give you too much of a typical 4-3 front. So they're going to get into that nickel situation, and then you're going to rely on a Sidney Jones or whoever that is that can come in there and hold it down and hold that slot down.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was thinking about this, you know, with Mills kind of stepping into the Malcolm role more or less. Malcolm wasn't really a true safety per se anymore. So I wonder if there is, you know, situations the majority of the time where Will Parks could be on the field and Jalen Mills is almost more in that linebacker hybrid Malcolm role for tight end coverage, you know, slot stuff. So they might be able to be on the field together at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Would you classify him as a starter, though? Will Parks?
Probably not. He'd be the depth guy, I would assume.
Yeah. Do you ever notice whenever they do talk in third person, they like almost immediately correct themselves? Like they realize, wait, that didn't sound right? Because I heard the same thing when I heard that Will Parks interview. He went Will Parks, and then he went me, and all that other stuff. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. That never comes off good. You never come off well. You never come off good when you go third person.
Once you go ahead and start third person, you may as well go ahead and just keep it going.
Commit to it. You can't stop.
Yeah,
it's like saying you're going to win, predict you're going to win, and then you're like, you know what, maybe I won't win. So it doesn't exactly show a lot of confidence there. You are listening to 97.5 The Fanatic, WPEN Burlington, Philadelphia, broadcasting from the Xfinity Studio, only from Comcast.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.